for argument is Foul Meridian versus Department of Health and Human Services. Mr. Grubbs or Ms. Grubbs? Mr. Grubbs? Yes.
May it please the court. I'm Mike Grubbs, appearing on behalf of FAL Meridian, which operates Meridian Nursing and Rehabilitation Center, FAL's Foundation for Adult Living. This Meridian facility is a small 20-room.
By the appeal, as near as I can figure out, but tell me if I'm wrong, the only sanction against your client was what, about the $3,400 fine?
$7,000 civil money penalty, but I
it was double. I was unclear whether it was the two or the, so it's the double. It's about $7,000.
Yes, Your Honor, $7,000 civil money penalty.
But why are you appealing a $7,000 fine? It must cost a lot more to appeal.
There's much more to this case than that. If you look at page 437 of the administrative record, you'll see an interview by the surveyor of the state-appointed guardian for the resident in question here, Resident B, who said this was about 2 weeks after these events, said the family are coming out of the woodwork. And I think we can all understand what that means. Civil suit.
I missed you.
There was an interview done by the surveyors as they were investigating this incident. It's recited at page 437 of the administrative record, where the guardian tells the state surveyor that since these events, family have been coming out of the woodwork. So there's a civil suit based on
by the estate.
The events by the family who are coming out of the woodwork, meaning they were nowhere to be seen prior to these events.
But there are no ramifications for the license of this nursing home other than with this violation. If there was no civil suit, you would just probably pay this thing rather than
That
fight it.
Could very well be a consideration. But the other factor, quite frankly, Your Honor, is, again, this is a small facility. The staff in this facility felt they did everything they could to protect the safety of this resident. And there's a morale issue that the corporation tries to defend their staff whenever they feel they've been unfairly charged. And that's what another factor.
What is the status of the civil suit?
It's still pending. And
is that a state court action?
Yes, Your Honor. And certainly having a summary judgment decision on the issue of, reasonableness of our interventions
right,
is not
treated as negligence per se.
Exactly, Your Honor. In this case, the Departmental Appeals Board, it went up through several levels, but when it got to the Departmental Appeals Board, the Departmental Appeals Board said it doesn't matter what this resident's mental capacity was, because we argued that there is a dispute about that. It doesn't matter when you started doing 15-minute checks on her, which we argued happened much earlier than the administrative law judge found, and we think that goes to the reasonableness of supervision.
You have expelled her or, you know, refused to take her or what?
Actually, she'd been there previously. She'd been there from July 1307 to October 807, about 3 months previously, and then gone to an assisted living facility. They had managed her successfully prior to that and had no reason to believe that they couldn't on this occasion.
I just wondered whether you have some contractual obligation to take certain people or whether it's just, you know, it's just a customer or patient, and if you felt you couldn't manage her, you'd just tell her to go home.
Well, they did. There were four attempts made to have her transferred out to psychiatric facilities. And in fact, they're in discussions about updating her care plan. Those were the updates that were made to contact the physician and seek out a psychiatric consult to try to deal with her behavior whenever she was continuing to be noncompliant. And they did that, in fact. They actually had a discharge arranged 2 days before she passed away, but she missed that discharge because she had she brought up an old belief that she had been raped, which was something that was way back in her past. So she had to be taken to the hospital and checked out for that, and as a result, missed her admission that was already scheduled for that day.
You didn't try to put her in a private room, though, Dad.
There were no private rooms available, and quite frankly, it wouldn't make any difference. I mean, some of the things that were suggested by the government were to move her into another room. She was getting water out of the sinks. Were we to take out every sink in the building? She's getting water out of the water fountains. Are we supposed to take that out? She's getting water on occasion from her roommate's water pitcher. Every resident in a nursing facility has a water pitcher. Were we to take all those away? Those suggested things that could have been done are, in fact, if you look at the record, not supported by anything more than speculation. In CMS's brief, at 18, counsel posits, well, you could have had one-on-one supervision during mealtimes. You could have restricted her access to dining rooms. That's not supported by any evidence. There's no citation to an affidavit here.
Well, what's the ratio of staff to patients?
It's hard to express, hard to answer that question directly.
During different times of the day, I suppose.
Exactly. It varies on day shift, evening shift, and night shift. I can't give you a definitive answer to that because our state used to require some 3.0 hours per patient day or something like that, but we don't do that anymore.
Is there anything other than a one-to-one ratio that would absolutely assure that she couldn't put anything in her mouth?
Well, even one-to-one in this case wouldn't have assured that. In fact, her attending physician in his affidavit said that would have increased her agitation level and made things worse. She'd had a sitter while she was at the hospital, and she had, in fact, been restrained while she was at the hospital before she was admitted. And our staff made it clear, we can't take this person unless you can get her off the restraints and get her off the need for one-on-one supervision. Nursing homes don't routinely offer one-on-one supervision. They do it periodically whenever they have no other options. And, in fact, here they did do some one-on-one supervision at certain times by putting her into a Jerry chair, which is a chair that she can't easily get out of, and putting her next to the nursing station so they could keep an eye on her. But, again, the suggested interventions that we should have been doing are not supported by anything other than speculation. Even the affidavit of Surveyor Fisher.
Is this a known condition, person who refuses to eat?
She wasn't.
I'm sorry, I got the opposite of you backwards. A person who is not permitted to eat but has a kind of insane, irresistible urge to eat? Or?
It's not uncommon. In fact, there was one other resident in the facility that had a nothing-by-mouth order that wasn't as persistent. And again, this was a competent resident who had a right to refuse medical treatment. You could take certain steps to try to intervene, and in fact, we believe that the steps that were taken were adequate because she never aspirated anything that she ate or drank.
Is she? And what was her mental condition?
She had a diagnosis of schizophrenia, but that was being treated. Now, there are a lot of schizophrenics walking around in the population at large that are not considered
incapacitated. She was being treated for schizophrenia?
She was being treated for schizophrenia. She was just persistently wanting to get food and drink. No, she was only 60 years old. She wasn't suffering from dementia.
But didn't she understand that it was dangerous for her to eat?
We believe that she did, and in fact, an affidavit from the director of nursing said that she knew what she was doing, that she repeatedly was told the consequences of consuming food and water, and chose to do it anyhow against medical advice. So we couldn't have restrained her because we felt that would have been taken away her dignity. I mean, it's a balancing act when you're trying to deal with these cases. I remember the words of one administrative law judge who said, There's a lot of cases where the facts are that the nursing home did nothing and let somebody elope or fall and not do anything. But there are a lot. This is not that type of a case. This is a case about whether what the nursing home did was adequate. And when you're judging the adequacy of something, that's a fact question. This should have gone to a hearing. All we wanted was a one-day administrative hearing.
What is the balancing? The controlling regulation says you're supposed to eliminate hazards to a point as possible, is the language, as I recall.
Right, that goes to taking out sinks.
That says you got to make it as safe as possible no matter what, doesn't it?
Well, and that you manage those hazards that you can't remove. Like you can't take the sinks out, you can't take everybody's water pitchers away, you can't take the water fountain out of the building. That this was a hazard that they had to manage. And all of these incidents that are talked about in the briefs came from the nursing notes. How did that note get there? The staff were watching her constantly, and they were under an obligation to write it down every time. The fact that they saw her at the water fountain means they went over and they stopped that, and they wrote it down on the chart. So this record can be looked at as a recounting all the times we failed, or it can also be seen, as we believe it should be seen, as a record of all the times those interventions were successful.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Grubbs. Mr. Ferguson?
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Doug Ferguson. I'm an assistant regional counsel with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and I'm representing the respondents, the Department of Health and Human Services, and Secretary Kathleen Sebelius.
Why isn't this just a refusal of treatment case?
It's not just a refusal of treatment case, because the resident in this case, even if she was able to understand the risk to her, that does not take away the facility's obligation to adequately supervise.
No, I don't understand you. I mean, suppose a person says, look, suppose the doctor says to you, look, there's something wrong with you, and if you drink champagne, you're going to die. And the person goes ahead and drinks champagne and dies. Well, you don't blame the doctor.
Well, it's just, I mean, let's say there was no question whatsoever about her cognitive capacity here. Just with someone outside of a facility who is bound and determined to commit suicide, that does not mean that there's not an obligation by family members, by anyone who has the ability to prevent that suicide, but from taking those kinds of measures.
There's an absolute constitutional right to refuse treatment.
But in this case, that's not true under the regulations here. I mean,
what do you mean? You have unconstitutional regulations?
No, they're not.
You're saying when you get into a nursing home, you can't refuse treatment?
There was no evidence in the plan of care for this resident that she was known to refuse treatment.
But according to your opponent, maybe he's wrong. According to your opponent, sure, she's schizophrenic, but she's treated. And so she, you know, she's not demented. And she says, she knows that it's very dangerous for her to eat, but she prefers eating.
Well, I mean, you may have noticed that the council was also arguing that they were trying to transfer her to a psychiatric facility. So there seems to be some incongruity in their argument. Either she could understand that...
Yes, fine. So what is her mental... what does the record show about her mental condition?
Well, her dysphagia, she was evaluated for swallowing difficulties.
No, that's not her mental difficulty.
But it actually goes one step further, and it says her swallowing difficulties had to do with her cognitive impairment. In other words, she would eat so quickly because she didn't realize that she needed to swallow, and that was a cognitive deficit.
She didn't realize that she needed to. Okay, this is not a symptom of schizophrenia, though. So are you saying she had other mental problems?
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's reflected in the record that she was not able to understand the eating process, the swallowing process. So it's not just a matter of understanding that if she eats foods, there's a risk to her, but it's how to eat food that she was not able to understand. And, yes, she's only 60 years old, but she did have schizophrenia, she had hallucinations, she had congestive heart failure, so she was a very vulnerable resident. And that's why in this case, this isn't a case...
Okay, so then, that's a good answer. So the next question is, what do you think they should have done?
Well, and there were suggested measures...
Did they kick her out?
Transferring the resident to a facility that has the ability to provide greater supervision is an option, and that, you know, according to the facility, that is something that they were exploring. It's not the preferred first option, and they had other options here. Now, counsel said you can't take away every water pitcher, but you can take a water pitcher out of a room with a resident who has displayed a behavior of drinking out of that water pitcher. You can also have staff available.
Well, what do you do? Does that mean you... Well, what about the sink?
Well, the sink, this isn't in the surveyor's affidavit, but they could have put a lock on the bathroom door and required her to call for staff assistance whenever she needed to use the bathroom, which is something that is not uncommon.
So she'd be locked in the room?
Not locked in the room, Your Honor, but just unable to go into the bathroom without staff assistance.
But you can't let her out of the room because she'll go and find food or water, right?
If it comes down to it, if a resident...
Right?
In this case, with a resident who was constantly seeking food, right, then eventually you do get to a point where you need one-on-one staff supervision. And in this case, the resident, before she was readmitted to the facility in the hospital, did have a constant staff present, a sitter, for a while. Now, they determined that before she was transferred to the facility, that she didn't need that.
They'd have to lock her in.
Or have a staff member assigned to her constantly.
A staff member in the room there, because what about when she's asleep or when, I don't understand.
Well, in this case,
either you lock her in, at least at night, or you have a staff member there 24 hours a day.
Well, correct. And counsel said that he viewed the many incidents where the staff caught her or observed her going to get food as examples of when they were successful in redirecting her. But there were actually 18 times when she was actually able to ingest food or liquids when the staff weren't able to catch her in time. So, yes.
In your view, will any nursing home ever admit such a person again?
Under my view, yeah, if they provide the level of staff supervision.
Can they be reimbursed for all this one-on-one business?
Well, they do receive reimbursements under both Medicaid and Medicare for, Medicare after a certain amount of time.
She's
once they're reimbursed.
She's only 60, though.
She is only 60, but if you are permanently disabled, you do get Medicare reimbursement.
She permanently disabled?
I'm not sure if that was the case, but actually, if you are in a facility that does have a Medicare provider agreement, the fact that the resident, him or herself, is not qualified for Medicare doesn't change the obligation to comply with the Medicare regs.
Does Medicare reimburse for the kind of, care that she required?
That probably is subject to dispute, whether there is whether the level of compensation under Medicare or Medicaid is adequate to meet these facilities' needs. It's something that I imagine would be subject to some debate. But
because if your safety standards are too stringent, these people won't get care.
I don't believe
there's no legal requirement for a nursing home to accept a person, is there?
There is no legal requirement, as long as they're not using invalid, discriminatory reasons not to accept someone.
Say, look, we can't take care of a person like this.
If the person needs are such that they do not have the staffing levels or they don't have the expertise required to meet that person's needs, they shouldn't accept them.
Is there a nursing home in the United States that has that can provide what you regard as the minimally required care?
In this case, I believe this resident's needs could have been met by Meridian. That this particular resident, there were many options open, and the surveyor.
There aren't many options. You've narrowed it. The bathroom door has to be locked. There has to be a person present, basically 24 hours, unless you're willing to lock her up at night, which is a little.
These were just suggested measures, Your Honor. In this case,
you have other suggestions.
Certainly, there was nothing in the facility's affidavits. They had two affidavits, one from the medical director and one from the nurse, stating that there was nothing in those two affidavits saying that they couldn't have transferred her to another room with a resident who did not receive her meals in bed. If you recall, this resident was found on her bathroom floor with the faucet running, with something that resembled a food particle in her mouth. And this resident took food from her roommate on more than one occasion. They didn't try transferring her to another room.
Well, what good would it be to be in another room?
If she
was
in
around, there's no food in the room, so she goes into the hall and goes and looks in other rooms.
And it takes more time for her to do that. And they have nurses stations.
She obviously had some insane craving for food. just being in a room that doesn't have food in it isn't going to make a difference.
It certainly does. It increases the amount of time and effort it takes for her to get access to food and water. It means that she has to walk out.
Time and effort. She's not crippled. Wasn't crippled. All she has to do is get up, leave the room, and walk down the corridor. There's a drinking fountain probably. Or looks into another room where someone's eating and go in and snatch the food.
That is correct, Your Honor, but that takes more time, and that means...
Right, so it takes 5 minutes more.
Key 5 minutes. She has to walk out into the hallway in front of a nursing station, which gives those nurses an opportunity to see her, and if the counsel's correct that redirection was working, to say to that resident, listen, you're not supposed to be going to the water fountain.
Would that be sufficient? If they just moved her into a room with a non-eater, is that enough?
It certainly, in this case, would have shown more effort.
No, that's not an answer to my question, is it? I said, is that enough?
In combination with the other efforts, it may very well have saved her life.
You're really hedging. In combination with what?
In combination with the 15-minute safety checks, in combination with the verbal redirection efforts, if they had transferred her to a room with a resident who did not...
Those things. So you're saying if they just added on transferring her to a room with a non-eater, that would suffice?
In this case, it may have sufficed. Yes, Your Honor.
It may have sufficed. Would it have sufficed?
The changing up of the care plan measures, the problem here was that they did not react.
You're not answering my question. Would it have sufficed or would it not have sufficed?
Your Honor, I believe it probably would have sufficed in this case. There was not a finding here that what the facility did actually caused her death. That is something that is a matter of dispute. And so the judge did not find that the facility's failures caused her death. But the fact that she was able to get access to the water, to her bathroom faucet, the fact that she was able to get access to her roommate's food, was obviously made it so easy for her to get access to food that it showed the facility was not taking reasonable measures to protect this resident. And I see that I'm out of time for the reasons stated in the party's briefs. Because there are no material factual disputes, the Secretary maintains that her decision upholding summary judgment in this case should be affirmed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ferguson.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Grubbs, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Thank you, Your Honor. 3 points. As far as the reason for the psych admission, the record shows that in the first 7 days after this resident was readmitted, she didn't sleep at all. So by the 29th, the seventh day, she was taken to the hospital for delirium evaluation for sleep deprivation. That had her to the point where she was falling back in the hallway and another resident caught her. So it's not because she was psychotic in any way. Some of the suggested interventions about locking the bathroom, taking the water pitcher away, or impair the roommate's rights as well now. This, again, when this was a facility that didn't have any other empty beds, there was no single room we could put her in, and now we're having suggestions that we need to start doing things that impair other resident rights. We're not permitted to do that and would be cited if we did. There was also no evidence that this resident ever ate her roommate's food other than one time. That was the night before she passed away. So the ALJ found that and made a specific holding that was accepted by the DAB that the staff knew throughout the entire admission that this resident was getting her roommate's food. That is not the case. This is a summary judgment case. It's not to be decided in a swearing contest by looking at a couple of affidavits. If we look at the affidavits of their nurse, even the speculation she makes about moving the roommate to another.
When you say summary judgment, are they required? Do they have the same basic procedural rules as the federal courts?
They have adopted it. There's actually a regulation that says a facility is entitled to a hearing, but over time, they've, through their manual provisions, adopted this policy of summary judgment. And in the applying it, their cases hold that a suggestion of interventions that could have been done without explaining why they're reasonable and wouldn't have caused more harm does not establish that what we were doing was unreasonable. And that's where we are in this case right now. All we want is a one-day administrative hearing where the interventions that were being used can be described by the witnesses, the doctor and the nurse, who've already submitted the affidavits, and they've already said why, what these interventions were reasonable. And I see my time is up.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Grubbs and Mr. Ferguson.